I'm introducing Robin Sarah. It is possible that we are past the middle now of the reading. I'm quoting some of Robin's lines. So to change the song or sing the changes, Robin Sarah has published 8 books or chapbooks. This is one I'm holding here, and 1, 2, 3, 4 of them are back there. Becoming Light, A Day's Grace, most recent. Questions about the Stars. And A Nice Gazebo, Nice Gazebo is short stories, right? Robin writes both poetry and prose, has received awards for both poetry and prose. The CBC Literary Competition for Poetry, National Magazine Award for Fiction. Has a pile of publications in anthologies, poetry, prose, and essays. I've actually just started to read Robin Sarah, and I'm happy to do so. It's a very precise and carefully crafted poems. I think they're both intimate, daily life type poems that make much of something small. Quotation, right? Yeah, there's also a consciousness of the burden of history, like the smell of char drifting across a sacked city. It's a pleasure for me to introduce Robin Sarah. A grace resides in mysteries like this one.
Introduction's going to be a hard act to follow.
I think he's read half of your work.
Well, I've written a little more than that. I'd like, first of all, to thank Zeke's Gallery and to thank Zach for inviting me to read tonight. And I'm going to do something I haven't done before, which is to read entirely prose poems. I've never done that at a reading. Every book that I've published of poetry has had some prose poems in it. And people sometimes say, well, why don't you write a book of prose poems? But that's not how they come to me. They come to me as poems among other poems, and they come now and then. And so they're interspersed with poems. But I'm going to give you a concentrated dose of them. The first is in my latest book, A Day's Grace. It appears in the book as a kind of prose prologue. Only a child alone. At the bottom of the slatted iron fire escape, there was a place where we used to play, not together, but singly, and at different times, because it was a secret and hidden place, enclosed on 3 sides by the back of our house and the house adjacent. Hardly any sun ever reached this place, and when it did, it was like a pale finger that crept down between the buildings to touch a spot on the ground without warming it. No grass grew here. The earth was hard-packed and damp, and it had a smell like potatoes going to sprout. In places, it was dusted with a thin fuzz of yellow-green moss that you could scrape away with the edge of last year's popsicle stick, stained gray from winter. Here and there were tall, spindly weeds with a rank smell, and tiny white specks with tinier yellow centers for flowers. The only other thing that grew here was chamomile. You were alone and secret in this place, even if it was blazing noon out in the street. Above you, washing flapped in the breeze, and sometimes something wet and clammy came tumbling down through tree branches to land beside you on the muddy ground. A pair of white cotton panties you might lift gingerly on the end of a stick and heave aside. Sometimes a woman came out to bang a mop against a railing, and down floated dust bunnies, dreamy as snow. Out of open kitchen windows came the sounds and smells of other people's houses, a baby crying, a radio playing, the whine of a vacuum cleaner, a mother singing or scolding, clatter of cutlery, smell of tomato soup, smell of floor wax. Sometimes I think my love of cities is actually the love of such small and closed spaces glimpsed from bus windows, from other people's balconies, through dusty screen doors. Spaces that breathe a promise which has no words but can be heard in the wind that rises before the first summer thunderstorm or in the first night rains of early spring. Spaces that make a harmony out of an old tree trunk, gray wooden sheds and stairways slanting between walls of buildings, a balcony rail graced with geraniums, a line of washing, a black iron spiral of fire escape, the dance of leaf shadows on a red brick wall. Sometimes a squirrel, a cat, the ambiance of cats, their musk in the sparse weeds at the base of the presiding tree. These spaces are cool and dank. They are shafts, well-like, in which one can sense the pull of generations has been caught forever in an eddy to swirl there like a movement of air, like a silent chord born again and again out of its own echo. One glimpses these spaces in passing but does not enter them. Only a child alone may play there, singing a private song, squatting under the fire escape and scraping at the dirt with half of a broken clothes peg to uncover sacred relics, a blackened penny, a scratched marble, pieces of blue glass, of green glass, a rubber wheel off a dinky toy, or maybe the hollow body of the truck itself, packed tight with clay-like mud. Coke bottle caps, caked with the same mud. A large button, a small button, their holes mud-plugged. A mateless earring, a key that will open nothing. The next two poems are from Questions About the Stars. Moths and Girl. All velvet cling and tremor these moths she has tamed to her finger, and when she touches behind the head they spread their wings for her, fan out the hidden colors folded there. And her eyes, wide open, are soft as the wings and hues as she moves them fluttering through the mouth of a gallon jar, brushes them off onto twigs and straw she has hung there to hold them sleeping. At night the jar comes alive like a light, faint ringing in the glass, like filament, the beating of wings. And her small hands are careful, carrying it like a light out into the dark, and careful, lifting the screen that covers it, and tender, coaxing each captive onto a fingertip, lifting it out, fluttering, lifting it to the night wind for the wind to take it. And also from Questions About the Stars, this is a very Montreal poem somehow. Wednesday Lunch. Fishing for a word in the Pam Pam Cafe. Our lunch dishes stacked, pages on the table. Worn, you say, or tarnished, used. I try blackened and eroded. Your eyes fix on a lamp above your head. Mine get lost among table legs, chair legs. Finally, we settle for old. Discovering the justness of the obvious, it has the right ring, this plain word, like reading the whole menu and ordering soup and a sandwich. We look at each other and laugh, and our laughter multiplies, drawing stares. When the waitress comes with coffee and that smile you want to dance to, we know that later we will go out into the humid afternoon and walk 5 or 6 blocks together for no good reason, rain wetting our faces. Get thirsty reading prose. Two more. They are both actually originally from my book Becoming Light, which is out of print, but they're reprinted in The Touchstone, published by Anansi in 1992. Detour. An unexpected turn, and the bus leaves you by a corner you've not seen before. Just a bit of city, neat flats above small storefronts, small front yards. Here by the corner post, a bushel basket planted with zinnias. There, a locust tree blowing against brick, the leaves untidy with autumn. Rain in the air. At your back, a corner grocer's. With each swing of the door, whiffs of ripe fruit, of scented soap and onions. Look across the street, an old barber shop. The striped pole revolving, and the barber moody, hands in pockets, gazing out through plate glass, motionless as the empty chairs behind him. Sparrows loud in a hedge, the leaves showing their undersides. You're not sure what street you're on, but you have your transfer, and what else is needed? This is the day's sole surprise. To find yourself for a short spell in this spot you'll likely not see again, though you pass close to it daily. A place of no importance in the frame of what you call your life. You hope the bus will come before the rain does. You like the look of the lights now in the shop windows. That's as far as you want to think it, holding your ground here for the time required, taking at face value this place that counts for today only. The place where you count to 10 and take the blindfold off, where you stand and wait on faith for your next connection. And also from the touchstone, to fill a life. To fill a life as fitful sky fills windows, or a painter canvas, to fill it willfully, to make large movements within a frame, I think is to be desired. The frame, too, not to contain, but to provoke such movement. No mirror will show you the lines worry pushes your face into, for in the looking, curiosity makes other lines. I want to move far enough away to see you whole, as a child will, in a loop that he makes of finger and thumb. Look how small I can make you, mummy. So the unmade beds of children, so the hats, scarves, mitts thrown pell-mell over the radiator, so the smell of damp wool filling the hall as the heat rises. On the counter, the jagged shells of breakfast eggs, a crust of stuck whites like brown lace in the cast-iron skillet still warm on the burner. So the towels on the bathroom floor, the steamed mirror, stray hairs in the tub and a blue worm of dried toothpaste on the edge of the sink, the tap dripping, humid air smelling of shampoo, the face of a life in motion. The pegs on the rack by the door, on which are slung umbrellas, shawls, soft bags of cloth and leather, the straps wound round each other. To delight in the weathered more than in polished planes, to prefer the visible repair to the thing redone, I think is to respect tenancy, its wear and tear, its fixed term. For each gray hair he pulls from her head, she gives her youngest son a penny. Until there are so many, he makes a bankrupt of her. No more, she throws up her hands, laughing. Decades later, when she sells the old house, he comes at night and removes from its hinges the door to the back shed, into whose reluctant grain he and his brothers gouged their names and a date in boyhood. He puts it on his car, he drives it home and stores it under his stairs. Three names on an unhinged door, the first of a man dead these 22 years. All winter, snow blows into the old shed. To fill a life, to fill one's own shoes and walk in them till the plies of the soles begin to separate, till the heels are rubbed away, till the toes turn up and the lettering inside has all flaked off, as fitful sky. To go with the drift of things, shifts of the light and weather. Snow blows into the tracks my skis made this morning. Erase all that. I am walking on the face of winter. It's like magic. It's like walking on water. It is walking on water. Are you listening? I know a man who photographs the bumps on faces, the tiny lines, who celebrates them with his sharpest focus. I know a man who broke his hammer trying to open a window. Each winter, new cracks open in the chimney wall. Air currents trace fresh strata of soot across the ceiling. A pulling against the grain, amoebas of light in the undulation of gauze curtains, the cross and mesh of lines. Water's resistance as the oars reverse direction. Walking upwind, syncopation in music or certain kinds of dissonance. Cloth cut on the bias, hair combed up from the nape. Velvet rubbed the wrong way with a finger. Or finger and thumb cleansed to an edge, testing each other's raised grain, feeling the lines that frame us whirl and loop for life beyond confusion. I want to move far enough away to see you whole. I want a lens to contain you, even upside down, as a handful of cast type contains its own impression, as winter contains spring, or the residue of snow, the shape of those things it melted around, the broken tricycle, the rusted spade. It is spring, the season for construction. No backward look in the way that old house is gutted for renovation. I watch from across the street, chunks of my life knocked out like bad teeth, the plaster dust drifting down like a chalky pall over the gardens. Erase all that. Are you listening? The face of a life in motion. The sound of pianos out of open windows, radios playing to empty kitchens. On the cold sidewalk, a ring of footsteps, that sound nearly forgotten. Clotheslines shrilling on rusty pulleys, the squeak of baby carriage wheels. Or close your eyes, and it's June. Pages torn from a child's copybook are blowing down the street. In the park by the stone pond, a line of figures in loose clothing practice Tai Chi, their movements sweeping, rhythmical, echoing each other like the arches of the pavilion behind them, reflected in the water. It's early morning. The movements are large, are generous, they flow, and the clothing too, as it fills with wind, flapping against the bodies held there in marvelous postures against the light.